In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, August 17th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, as it is every Wednesday at this time, it's Pentagon Solutions, where we have a deep dive conversation that calls on experts in defense issues both inside and outside the Pentagon to share ideas that leaders in the Pentagon and the contracting community can use to solve the big challenges they're facing. My guest today is Jacques Gansler. He's professor and Lippitz chair in public policy and private enterprise at the University of Maryland and former undersecretary of defense for acquisition technology and logistics. And he is author of the new book, Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry. Jack, it's great to see you again. Thanks for coming.
Good to be back.
This is your, how many books is this
Fifth.
For you now? Fifth. And what does this book add to the work that you've already put into print?
Well, the main difference is this is a book that attempts to look at it from the 21st century perspective. And what I've written in the past were really Cold War and post-Cold War period 20th century stuff, and the 21st century is dramatically going to be different in terms of technology, in terms of geopolitics, in terms of warfighting, go down the list. And therefore, it's necessary to take a new look. And what we have in the case of the industry is basically a consolidated 20th century industry. In fact, a Defense Science Board study found that was the bumper sticker for their study.
Yeah.
And war fighting, we're now talking about war that's very different than tank-on-tank engagements. We're talking about war among the people, if I use Rupert Smith's expression. And so the whole environment and the geopolitics are certainly different, and industry's very different. It's globalized. Technology's globalized. Industry's globalized. Labor is even globalized. And so how do we address this 21st century national security issues, which are also very different? We hadn't worried about pirates in the 20th century. We hadn't really, until 9/11, worried about terrorists. And certainly the uncertainty that we saw, the instabilities that we saw in North Africa and Middle East, that's a whole new environment, and different types of equipment, different types of intelligence, different types of warfighting, all are going to be required. We're going to have to mix, for example, State Department with Defense Department, so-called soft power and hard power.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to certainly do everything on an international basis. You can't solve terrorism alone. You have to view it on an international basis. You can't solve cybersecurity by one nation. You know, if I wanted to attack you, I'd do it through China or someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to get international agreements in terms of how to address cybersecurity. And that's going to be a major problem, not just for the defense world, but for the commercial world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our whole power grids are vulnerable to cybersecurity, our whole communication systems and so forth, the banking systems, even the hospital systems. So the world is different in the 21st century. And what I was trying to address in this book was, how do we prepare for, what are the differences, what government processes, practices, policies have to change in order to be prepared for the response required in the 21st century?
This book includes a lot of passages that lay the groundwork for somebody who may not have read your previous books or who may not be well-versed in the history of how we got to where we are today. Why did you think that was important to address in a book like this?
Well, I thought that it should stand alone, first of all, and to try to better understand why we do things the way we do them now or should do them in the future requires you to have an understanding of the past. And the evolution of where we are today is important in the sense that almost everything you want to change, people will resist. Change is always resisted, especially by the incumbents. And therefore, if you're going to make change, you have to understand why the current system doesn't satisfy the needs of the future. Therefore, you have to understand the current system a little bit and understand what's required for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent you can do that with quantitative data-based information rather than just arm-waving. It took me a little extra effort to try and incorporate a lot of the historic data to show what have been the trends. It's the trends in many cases that have to be reversed.
Mm-hmm. You write in the preface to the book, in many ways, this is a life's work. How did this become your life's work? Was there an event or a chain of events or something where you said, you know what, this is what I care about, and this is what I want my legacy to be, a difference between when I started and where I am today.
Yeah, I guess it's a chain of events more than it is a specific, wow, mm-hmm. kind of event. I was an undergraduate at Yale doing electrical engineering. I was a scholarship student, so I had to go to work. And the question was, well, where is the exciting engineering being done? It was at that time being done in the defense world. Today it's shifted many areas to commercial. So my first job was designing guided missiles for the defense world. That's obviously a defense unique product.
You know? Yeah.
And then
I don't have many of those anymore.
Well, then I got a master's in engineering, but then I decided I really was interested because engineers only can take very limited number of electives. I thought I'd take some electives. And so I got a master's in liberal studies. And I found that the economics field really interested me. So while I was still working full time for all these things, I then got a PhD in economics. And now I'm talking about engineering design and cost, the combination of those. And that's basically the problem we have today. At the one point in my career, I was vice president of ITT, and I wrote a paper, probably foolishly, that said I thought the government could do its business better. And the fellow who was running then the research and engineering for the Department of Defense called me and said, I'll give you the electrical engineering portion of my research and development. You can run all the electronics programs. You try it. Well, so I came to the government, and that was what I thought was going to be 2 years and stayed a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
I started up the global positioning system in that job, and it was really an exciting, interesting job. Then I went back to industry afterwards and worked on something called the Packard Commission, which established Goldwater Nichols, and worked closely with Bill Perry and Dave Packard on that. And then while I was back in industry, Bill Perry called me up and said, would you mind if I recommended you to Bill Cohn to go back into the government again a second time? And that was when I was undersecretary. And by that point, I realized that one of the more important things is how the government does its business in order to get a stronger national security posture for less money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, that's the problem. I mean, that's the one that Bob Gates has really gotten everybody's attention to. You know, we're going to get less money and more need for national security with this huge spectrum of potential areas of interest. How do we handle that? And that's going to be a function of, you know, what we buy, how we buy it, who does the buying, and where we buy it from. All mm-hmm. four of those issues are critical, and that's what I tried to address in the book.
I would guess that there was no shortage of opportunity for you to go back into industry when you left the Pentagon. Why'd you go to the University of Maryland?
Well, I guess it was just the idea of being able to teach and guide and still continue to write. And that intellectual stimulation was really what caused me to do it. As you said, I had spent most of my life in industry or government mm-hmm. and back and forth a couple of times. But the concept of teaching has always interested me. I did a lot of 10 years of executive teaching at the Kennedy School at Harvard, and I enjoyed doing that. And so this seemed like a good opportunity. As long as I could still stay in touch with industry on corporate boards, and as long as I could still stay in touch with the government by Defense Science Board, National Academy, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got too many things going on, but it keeps me out of trouble.
You'll never retire, will you?
Oh, no.
You don't strike me as the kind of person who's...
My wife said I failed retirement totally every time.
My guest is Jack Gansler of the University of Maryland. He's former Undersecretary of Defense for ATL. And we'll talk more. We'll get into the book here. I've made some notes on some things I'd like to ask you about. The book is called Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry. And we'll talk more about it when we come back on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta said yesterday big cuts would terribly weaken U.S. national security. He said the Pentagon is prepared to make $350 billion in cuts over the next 10 years, but larger cuts could be devastating. During an appearance at the National Defense University, he said progress by American-led forces against the Taliban in Afghanistan and by NATO forces in Libya might suffer from the cuts. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and Defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
I work to help our nation, and my work makes an impact. I help my government and our allies keep citizens safe from terrorism and cyber warfare. I work for ManTech International Corporation.
Around the world and at home, ManTech employees work side by side with our troops and government to protect our homeland. We have more than 10,000 professionals doing rewarding work every day. If you're an IT professional, security expert, intelligence analyst, or engineer, apply today at mantech.com/careers.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
You can't build a house without a strong foundation, and you can't build a truly efficient data center without storage efficiency. If you're in federal IT, you know the importance of operating as efficiently as possible. NetApp storage is flexible, easy to manage, and requires far less hardware, often only half as much. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency, built on NetApp, and delivered by NetApp partners like GTSI. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Authors, exploring national security, power, and leadership in the 21st century. What is smart power? How do 21st century challenges demand a reshaping and redefining of global leadership? And how best can national security leaders transform the intelligence enterprise to meet today's needs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Professor Joseph Nye, author of The Future of Power, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Thursday morning's Federal Drive. The IT budgets are getting tighter and the trends are changing. We'll get analysis from VMware. And agencies are getting fit. Now contractors are too. How you can save money and keep your employees healthy by working out at work. That and more Thursday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out, federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My Pentagon Solutions guest today is Jacques Gansler. He's author of the book Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry, and former Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics. So you know this a little bit about this stuff, right, Jack?
I hope so.
Yeah. By the way, we have information about the book and a link to it on Amazon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. So if somebody wants to grab a copy, you can do it that way. You write in the first chapter of this book called The Challenge. It takes two things to achieve a culture change: recognition of a crisis and leadership that has a vision of the change and is devoted to its implementation. It strikes me that number two is probably a lot easier to achieve than number one, because it might be harder for the leaders to convince the people that they're leading that now's the time to do it. This is a crisis. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The necessity here is not that there is a crisis, but that the crisis is widely recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the challenges for the leader to convince people. And usually it's after the fact it's easy. You know, we had the 9/11 event, so everybody recognized we have to do some reorganization, we mm-hmm. have to shift resources, so forth. But prior to that, such as now, we've had 10 years of defense budget growth, rapid growth, living in basically a rich man's world, in effect. And if you don't have enough money, you add a supplemental to add to that, even mm-hmm. another $100 billion or so. And now suddenly you have Secretary Gates has been saying, well, we see it coming. It's going to change. And it's obvious when you see what's happened with the budget and the ceilings and so forth. There's no way we can avoid it. I mean, every day in America, 10,000 people age into Social Security. Social Security, Medicare, they're growing. There's no question about it. But the defense sector within it also has lots of growth. Not only weapon systems that everybody knows about, but personnel costs, healthcare alone. Healthcare alone last year was something like $83 billion, counting the retirement healthcare and the VA and other costs of military healthcare. So with everything growing now, and except for the budget, and for the budget going to be a constraint, and with lots of different potential threats that you have to be prepared for in terms of national security, we have to recognize that now cost does matter, and that's the real challenge to us.
You make it a comment there that I'm going to tie back to something that you said in the first segment. You mentioned in the first segment that the future, the way this will all look in the future, will require DOD to work with the State Department and collaborate on soft power and things like that. And Secretary Gates talked about that a lot when he was in office. You just mentioned when you roll VA healthcare costs into that conversation, personnel costs are tremendously high. One of the areas that members of Congress, particularly Senator McConnell, took a lot of criticism during the debt limit debate was kind of reshaping the whole DOD issue into national security spending. There was a lot of criticism about, well, he's just doing that because then all the cuts don't have to come out of defense and so on. It sounds like when we look at it the way that you're talking about it, like that's probably not a bad idea. Like that's probably a more logical way to think about national security than just Pentagon spending.
Well, it's part of the solution is to think bigger, not only in multi-agency, but even multinational. Clearly, the multi-agency has gotten some attention finally. I mean, the Southern Command and the African Command both have a deputy from the State Department. But you don't solve the overall national security budget problem by taking it out of the small pieces. The State Department really is underfunded in this area. And so we have to recognize that it's probably going to have to come more from defense. But then the question is, do you do it with a shock treatment? So Congress just picks a big number and adds, takes it away and doesn't do it rationally. That's the wrong thing to do, too. We have to be very careful about how we go about doing it, and it has to have some logic to it, not just arbitrary slashing. You know, you can't just say, well, let's take it away from contractors or do it this way or that way. You have to actually have a good rationale for projecting it into the 21st century and doing it in a coherent way, but recognizing that we can't afford to continue the growth that we've had in the past.
When you were first on the show a year and a half or so ago, you used the term global war on contractors, and I've heard you use it in other venues too. Is that getting better or worse, do you think?
No, I think right now there's a major problem here in recognizing the importance of contractors. For example, even in the situation in Iraq and Afghanistan, now in the total force there, there are 170,000 contractors, about 100,000 of people in uniform. We have more than 50% of the total force are contractors. But it's important that they be used efficiently and effectively. And that's something we have to recognize as a 21st century type environment. The military leaders have to be trained in the value of this mixed force and how they are dealt with. The Congress has to recognize that how this mixed force can be of value and also be concerned about it in terms of oversight and so forth. But we don't need to have, right now in Iraq and Afghanistan, I just got a note the other day that said there are 14 audit agencies over there. That's overdoing it, you know. That's not the most efficient way to do it. And you may remember when we had the overpriced toilet seats and hammers and things like that.
Yeah.
Congress legislated that the price of a toilet seat cannot exceed $660, and they added 5,000 auditors to take care of overpriced toilet seats. I mean, that can be overdone in some ways, too.
Why is it hard to find that in-between balance where the pendulum is hanging straight down instead of swinging so wildly from side to side?
I think in some places there's not an understanding of how industry works. And, for example, just by saying, well, we can bring it in-house and therefore it's cheaper, there have been separate studies by Congressional Budget Office and other CBO and others that simply say it's much more expensive to do it in-house because you have to have the big overhead costs of the long-term retirement medical coverage and the buildings and all the other things that aren't obvious in the case of the government but are obvious in the case of industry because you're paying for that. And in fact, the in the case of maintenance of an airplane, that's not an inherently governmental function. But at one point, the Air Force thought they could save 40% by doing it in-house. Congressional Budget Office said it was 90% more expensive to do it in-house because you have trained people from industry to do it. So this question of what is an inherently governmental function is now something that's getting addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important question. What things should be done by industry? What things should be done by government? There are very important government oversight functions, management, budgeting, contracting, so forth, that we need skilled people in the government to do it. Those functions have been undervalued enormously in the last decade as we had lots of money and we just kept throwing money away.
Mm-hmm. You write about that in the book, and I hope we'll have time to get to that. I've made so many little post-its here, I'm not sure we'll get to nearly all of them. But when we come back, I want to talk some more about just the overall challenge where you start the book out. My guest is Jack Gansler on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Attention federal agencies. Want to upgrade your old, inefficient printer? Buy select HP printers and save up to $700 instantly when you trade in your old laser or inkjet printer. Best of all, the shipping and recycling of your old printer are free as part of the HP Trade-In and Save program. Take advantage of this offer from GovConnection, the federal marketplace's trusted source for technology products, contract expertise, and exceptional service. For complete details, call GovConnection today at 1-800-800-0019.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest and partner, John Frieden, where we'll talk about the law of blogging. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service firm serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity? Working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at techsystems.com, T-E-K-Systems.com.
Cloud computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how. Cloud Advantage for Government. The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com. Brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
The valuable information you get on the radio waves transmitted by Federal News Radio may one day provide an added benefit, power for some of your electrical devices. We're bathed in communication signals from radio, TV, and cell phones. Josh Smith, an Intel engineer, says we can tap those airwaves for energy.
The lowest power devices nowadays consume such a small amount of energy that you can actually power them off these signals that used to seem like they only had information.
Engineers are tuning antennas to pull in stray radio waves that are then converted into electricity.
It's starting to become possible to get rid of batteries from the lowest end devices.
Smith has already demonstrated it works to power a kitchen thermometer and has other applications like clocks and mobile phones in mind. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps-based commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort AP Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today on Pentagon Solutions is Jacques Gansler, professor at University of Maryland and former Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics. And we are talking about, among other topics, his new book, Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry. And there is always so much going on in this world, Jack, that we couldn't stick exclusively to your book. There are other things that we'll have to cover. But one of the things that you write about, either intentionally on your part or unintentionally, is something that's your successor, one of your successors, the current ATL, Ash Carter, has talked about. And that is the concept of industrial-based planning. Now, Secretary Carter has said that the Pentagon will look very closely at consolidation and M&A in the defense industry. You write in this book, there's been little industrial-based planning by either government or industry to minimize the negative effects of widely varying demands for military equipment. If we're in any time at all, we're in a time of varying demands for weapons systems in particular. Why is industrial-based planning so important, and where should it mostly be coming from, the government side or the industry side?
Well, first, it's important to recognize that the government is a monopsony buyer, a single buyer. Hopefully no one else needs missiles and weapons and nuclear bombs and things like that. Mm-hmm. So as the only buyer, they have a responsibility to structure the industry that supplies them in order to make that industry incentivized to give them higher performance at lower cost. That's the overall objective. You don't tend to get that from a monopoly supplier.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if they went down to one supplier instead of, say, two or three in a given sector, they'd be in real trouble. And therefore, it's important for them to structure the industry with competition, for example, but not to pick the winner and loser. That's where the market operates.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you have a market effectively working, then the single buyer can shape it.
Mm-hmm.
And they can say, well, look, I need two people in this business at least. And I'm going to make sure that we have two. And if necessary, if the first one is now in production, I'll put the second one into research and development. But that second one, I'm not going to pick ABC company. I'm going to let five companies bid to be who can be the second one.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep competitive market operating through a structure. And then I look also at the lower tiers, which is one of the important pieces here, because most of the really innovative stuff comes from the radar supplier or the engine supplier, not necessarily the airplane supplier.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to look at the lower tiers of the industry, not just the prime. So if you had, say, two people, as we do in the case of jet engines in America today, you don't want those two to combine and only have a monopoly supplier of jet engines.
Right.
And that's why you can use your programs, and this is industrial-based planning, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
A good example of that would be on the F-35, the largest program in history, the Joint Strike Fighter, keep both engine suppliers rather than one. We've mm-hmm. gone to one, which mm-hmm. I think is the wrong solution.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be the kind of thing that you'd use for shaping the industry, and you'd let those two compete against each other for the share of the business.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't guarantee either of them a large share. You'd want them to compete to get high performance at low cost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are sections in the industry where Congress even has legislated monopolies. In the case of depot repair work, for example, Congress has mandated that half of that work be done on a monopoly basis in government facilities rather than competing. Congress has also more recently mandated that non-inherently governmental work no longer should be competed using a competition, so-called A76 competitions. That doesn't make sense when all the data says you get a 30% savings with improved performance when you allow competition to work.
Mm-hmm.
So structuring the industry is really important. And by the way, all other countries by and large have industrial structure planning for their defense sector. I mean, even the Chinese recently have announced their industrial-based strategy. The British have a strategy. The Russians have a strategy. Everyone has a strategy. And these are very important. For example, one of the things I would have in my strategy is that we take full advantage of commercial suppliers. Well, we have now lots of policies and laws against that that we have to change if we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Another example would be global suppliers, where appropriate, if they're better, take advantage of that and let them compete with ours so we can get higher performance at lower cost and force our own suppliers to move up in that scale.
Are we too patriotic for our own good sometimes?
Well, this is not a world in which isolationism actually pays.
Mm-hmm.
Today, industry is globalized, technology is globalized, labor is globalized. There's not a single U.S. weapon system today that doesn't have foreign parts in it. And it's not because they're cheaper. It's because they're better.
Mm-hmm.
We want to take full advantage. Our position should be technological superiority. So we want to get the best we can, and we want to encourage the U.S. firms to be the best at the lowest cost.
If all these other countries are doing this planning and we're not, why is that, do you think? Is it because for the last decade or longer we've just been plowing money in and needing instant results and we're thinking about the short term and not the long term?
Well, certainly that's been the case for the last 10 years, that we've been able to afford anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the costs have been skyrocketing in many areas. The Joint Strike Fighter that I mentioned used to be designed to be $35 million each. Now it's over $100 million each. The only thing I joke with the Air Force that they've kept is the name. It's called the F-35. You know, but the idea of focusing on cost as a military requirement so you can get the quantity that you need is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And now we need to focus on how do we get low cost and high performance. You do that through market forces.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way the real world works.
You were on the Federal Drive a couple of weeks ago when the book first came out, and I heard you tell Tom and Amy the JDAM story that you've talked about on this show.
Yeah,
too.
This is a perfect example of how we could do it. The JDAM is an air-to-ground precision-guided missile, and the chief of staff of the Air Force wrote a handwritten note, I have a copy of it, said there are only three requirements for that missile. First of all, it should work. Secondly, it should hit the target. And third, it should cost under $40,000 each. And today, it hits the target, it works, and it costs $17,000 each. That's the way the real world works. That's the way you and I buy a car or a television set or anything else. What's happened now as a result of this emphasis on cost within the Defense Department, they're moving to forgetting about performance side and only talking about cost.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the contract techniques that I've seen coming up now is something called minimum acceptable low bid.
Uh-huh.
You know, technically acceptable low bid. That's not the way you and I would buy our heart surgeon at the lowest hourly rate. And I don't see us buying professional services that way. We should do best value, the combination of performance and cost.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make sure that we're getting the high performance on our systems as well as the low cost. And you can do that. Computers every day go from generation to generation or higher and higher performance at lower and lower cost. Why can't we do that with our weapon systems? Because we haven't been in the past 10 years forced to worry about cost.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to be worrying about cost. And that's going to be a management challenge for us. But we have to do it.
My guest is Jacques Gansler. He's author of the book Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A. The guest is Dan Doherty, Vice President of EMC Federal. Today's question, how are IT managers accelerating cloud and virtualization while reducing the cost of infrastructure?
Federal customers have to do more with less. EMC Unified Storage is simple and efficient in virtualized environments. Having the most integration with virtual environments means you go faster and save more money.
So EMC takes the risk and cost out of virtualized environments.
That's right. EMC is number one in virtualized environments.
Now available on GSA schedule through government acquisition.
Newsmakers, talk to Jared Serbu.
Captain David Dermanelian is the Coast Guard's Chief Information Security Officer.
When we start talking about Android and the iOS devices, without injecting risk on our infrastructure, we're able to allow the end users now to access their personal social media sites as well as their personal banking or otherwise sites. That's an additional bonus, if you will.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jack Gansler. He's author of the book Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry. And one of the things you write in this book, Jack, and it fits a little bit with what we were talking about just a few minutes ago, the possibility of further consolidation has raised considerable concerns about the reduction or even elimination of competition at both the prime contractor level and the subsystem level. Now, we talked about the prime contractor level. If you and I are the only two people that make jet engines, it's not advantageous for DOD to have us merge. Talk about the subsystem level a little bit, though, because that might not seem so obvious on the surface.
No, in fact, all the way down to the component level. If everybody is dependent upon the same single supplier of semiconductor, you know darn well that the price of semiconductors is going to skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to the point of being down at the lower tiers, many of the critical technologies exist at the lower tiers. And one of the things we have to make sure is, as the dollars are being cut, that we don't cut out research at this lower tier level, because we want to stay ahead. And we want to have multiple firms that stay ahead, not just one,
mm-hmm.
in order to maintain competition at the lower tiers. And by the way, most of the costs, as well as the technology, are at the lower tiers. I mean, a typical airplane, 70-80% of the costs are at the lower tiers.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with a ship or, you know, any major weapon system. And so we have to focus all the way down in the lower tiers, not just at the who makes the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the big costs and the big risks are tend to be at the lower tiers.
But how does that responsibility break down? I mean, as you talk about this, it seems to me that it's advantageous for the companies in industry to be aware of this and be on top of this, and not. Certainly, it's something that the Pentagon will be aware of and will follow, but it seems to me if I'm a company, I'm going to want to do this just to stay competitive. Is that not the case?
Well, the other option for the company is to buy the supplier and have it vertically integrated and mm-hmm. don't have competition. Mm-hmm. And there's been a tendency towards make rather than buy, I mean, through vertical integration, which did occur significantly in the post-Cold War period.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to make sure that you end up still with suppliers who can compete, because from the company's viewpoint, having it all in-house is a lot easier and cheaper, and from their viewpoint, it's sole source.
Mm-hmm.
And so from their perspective, the government has to be the one that says, no, that acquisition doesn't make sense, that merger, because now you've eliminated the suppliers at the lower tiers,
mm-hmm.
because Company X is going to buy from their own divisions. They're not going to go out and buy from Company Y and Z's divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to keep a competitive base at the lower tiers. Now, the one thing I do want to emphasize on competition, though, is you don't do it for its own sake. You know, there are times when a company that's doing a good job should be rewarded. You shouldn't have a rule that says every 3 years we're going to compete no matter what. You should say every 3 years we're going to compete unless you get higher performance at lower costs year after year, in which case we'll reward you. You don't need to have competition. That's the incentive follow-on awards are just as big as incentive as competition.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned there the drawdown after the Cold War, and I've heard arguments on both sides. Some folks have said the situation we're in right now is very similar to that, and our response should be similar, and there are some folks who have said it's dramatically different, and our response should be dramatically different. And I guess there are even folks in the middle who say the situation we're in today is very similar, and our response should be dramatically different. I've heard very few people, if anybody, say the situation's different, but we should do the same thing. Where are you on that matrix?
Well, in the post-Cold War period, immediately after the end of the Cold War, the defense budget plummeted, and a major share of those dollars, $100 billion, came out and per year, and $60 billion of that was in procurement areas. And so the firms consolidated. We went from literally 50 major firms supplying to the Defense Department down to five or six, depending upon how you count them. But it was just a few. And then you had vertical integration also taking place where the primes were buying the lower tiers up. And there's no question that if you had gone down from five in one area to two in one area, you still have competition. But if you're going from two to one, you're out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now in the prime level where you only have five or six of them left, you have to be very careful not to let them get together if they're in the same business area. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true at the lower tiers. And we also have the same problem in the services area, which is a major part of our acquisitions today. Last year, it was 57% of all the dollars went into services, not goods. And so when you have one or two people in a service business like computer services or whatever services they're supplying, then you have to make sure you still have competition in the services side, not just on the product side.
Mm-hmm. Are we procurement-wise able to handle that 57%, that means 43% are goods.
All of our rules and practices are based upon buying airplanes and weapons and so forth, and we don't have any rules, policies, practices, and so forth for buying things like engineers or grass cutters,
mm-hmm.
or food service or truck drivers, and these are the kind of things that are being done over in Iraq and Afghanistan, maintenance workers, and it's very different to buy an engineer than an airplane. I mean, you don't actually have to do a test and evaluation phase for the engineer. You know? But you don't want to base it on, again, the lowest price available. You really can't base it on the fact that his temperature is 98.6 and he has a degree
uh-huh.
from the back of a matchbox. You know, you really want to be able to figure out how to make good selections of services and reward good performance for services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I evaluate a grass cutter? You know, does grass have to be cut every week? Does it have to be less than 3 inches? Does it have to be green, not brown? So forth. We have to learn how to do all of that in terms of requirements process, in terms of contracting for it, in terms of measurement of performance and rewards for performance, et cetera. We don't have the policies and practices for doing that, and people aren't being trained on that. They're being trained. All the case studies that have been written are all buying things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're spending more than 50% of our dollars on buying services.
You and I could probably do a whole hour just on requirements.
Yeah.
I bet we could. Maybe we should do that sometime. I think that would be good. You write in this book, during the first decade of the 21st century, supplemental defense budgets were used to pay for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Will they ever go away? Or will they when the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan go away or scale down substantially?
Well, in theory, the supplementals are based upon emergency, unpredictable things. If you're at war for 10 years, how unpredictable is it?
Well, and you've read one, I'm sure. I have. There's a whole lot of predictable stuff in the ones that we have now that don't have anything to do with Iraq and Afghanistan.
Exactly. And the interesting thing to me has been this recent debate about the budgets and the ceilings and debt and so forth have all talked about the fundamental budget. They've all ignored the supplemental. And, you know, every $100 billion matters. You know, mm-hmm. How much can you ignore? And so those dollars have to be absorbed. For example, a lot of that is maintenance. And you're still going to have to do the maintenance on this equipment even if the war's over, because you got to repair it to get it ready for the next time you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the things that were being covered as almost a slush fund, if you will, called the supplemental, now have to be absorbed within the basic underlying budgets, and that makes it even more challenging.
You just said something that strikes me that's different than the last time we talked about after the Cold War. You have to keep that equipment ready for the next time you need it. I think there were a lot of folks who, when the Cold War was over, thought we wouldn't necessarily need all of this stuff anymore. Is that mindset different now, do you think? Is that change permanent?
I think it's a question of what will you need rather than the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you expect that at least Secretary Gates had been saying that we're more likely to see the kinds of things we're seeing now in Iraq and Afghanistan than we're likely to see the Russians coming through the Folder Gap and have tank-on-tank battles.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not as likely. So there are things we need to keep for intelligence gathering, for the infrastructure for the kinds of scenarios we're likely to see in the 21st century. And we still have to be prepared for some pretty odd situations of rogue nations with nuclear weapons. You know, how do we prepare for things of that sort? We need to think all of this out very carefully and make sure that the flexibility that we have or should have is available.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big problems is I can list a dozen or so different kinds of things we should be prepared for, but we can't afford to individually prepare for every one of them. We have to have the flexibility to shift from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that means a more responsive military side and more responsive industrial side. We can't take 20 years to develop a new thing that we might need. You know, when we discover we got roadside bombs, we need to figure out a way to address them right away.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever the next situation is going to be. And that means a fast responding procurement system and a fast responding industrial base to be able to do when the general says, I need it now. He doesn't mean after a 20-year development cycle.
Mm-hmm.
He really means now.
Yeah. My guest is Jacques Gansler. He's author of the book Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry. And you can find out more about the book and figure out how to get yourself one at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back to wrap up on Federal News Radio in just a moment.
Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
NASA awarded the final of four contracts to revamp its IT infrastructure. Under the Information Technology Infrastructure Integration Program, known as I3P, NASA awarded four technology contracts over the past year that could be worth more than $4 billion. In the latest deal, the space agency hired the Portal Group Consulting. The company will install and operate hardware and software and provide support services for NASA headquarters in Washington. The five-year contract is worth $82 million.
If you're in federal IT, you know that every internet connection and every mobile device poses a threat to your data. Visit cdwg.com/security to learn how our security experts use the latest technology to help keep your agency ahead of those threats. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn how scalable security solutions from McAfee can defend your agency's network with less to deploy and manage.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The U.S. Coast Guard is becoming the first military service to adopt iPhones and Android smartphones for its workforce. Coast Guard officials say their current generation of wireless handheld devices was becoming obsolete, so they needed to move on to new technology. The devices will run software that creates a secure, encrypted sandbox for government email and other data. And down the road, the Coast Guard is also planning to develop its own mobile applications to help its members respond to incidents.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Join Alan Greenspan, the former chair of the Federal Reserve System, as he discusses the intersection of economics and IT at the Innovation Nation Forum, August 23rd at the D.C. Convention Center. Also there, the Merit Awards will recognize the best idea to use IT to improve government with a $50,000 cash prize. Shake IT up. Register at meritalk.com. That's M-E-R-I-T-A-L-K.com.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jack Gansler. He's author of the book Democracy's Arsenal, Creating a 21st Century Defense Industry. And as I said at the beginning, I've marked a whole bunch of different places here. We're not going to get to them all. But I do want to know, when you look at a book like this, what, and you've written other ones, and we talked about the other ones that you've written, how did you get to where this one was the next thing that you, the next subject that you needed or wanted to cover?
The MIT Press, who published my very first book 30 years ago, said that was their bestseller that year, and would I mind just updating it? And, you know, the world has changed so dramatically that I couldn't just change page 37 and 52. Mm-hmm. I had to really start from scratch, and so I felt it was important to understand what had changed and how we got where we are. And so I ended up writing the book. Took a long time, but it was, I think, important to get it all into one package.
How long did it take?
Between the first draft and the second draft and so forth, probably 2 years.
You got about 350 pages here. This is the thing that I took away from it was you didn't want this to sound like a textbook or an academic tome. You wanted this to be something that people could pick up and get information out of it that was usable to solve some of these challenges. Is that what you were shooting for?
Yes. No, there are a couple of schools have even, some military schools have even said they're starting to use it. When the Washington Post had on their blog a listing of important books, and they even listed it as one of their top 10. So I was pleased with the response it's gotten. But on the other hand, it was not written as a solely academic thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was written for practitioners, for the obvious problem we're facing today, which is how do we handle national security with less dollars? And that's the 21st century challenge in the environment of the 21st century, not of the 20th century. So simply making the same old equipment cheaper isn't the answer. You're going to need new things for the new world.
Always appreciate having you in the studio, Jack. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
Jack Gansler is the author of the book Democracy's Arsenal. You can learn more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up at 4:05, the agency buyout and early out list getting longer and longer. You'll hear about it on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.